Today on Inno Latino.
There's a famous Stephen Hawking quote, which is, don't look down at your feet, look up, you know.
Yes.
Look up at the skies, because that's where possibility lies.
Celebrating Women's History Month in 2021, this episode brings you Christina Korp, better known as the Astronaut Wrangler. Hailing from a Oglala, Sioux, Mexican, Irish, and Polish background, this South Dakotan comes from a musical career that started when she was 12 years old. After a successful career as a singer and a songwriter in LA, Christina became a producer. No, not for a rock star, but an astronaut. In fact, the rock star of astronauts, Buzz Aldrin. Yay, that Buzz Aldrin from the Apollo 11 mission that landed on the moon for the first time. Christina is the founder of Purpose Entertainment, and her firm produces events that create meaningful experiences and projects with purpose that can make the world a better place. Enjoy. Hola, mi gente. Welcome to another episode of Inno Latino. I want to introduce to you our guest today, and her name is Christina Korp. Bienvenida, Christina. Welcome.
Thank you.
Christina is such a fascinating character. She is not only a thought leader and a leader in diversity, but she shares something not only interesting, but inspirational to me, and it's her passion for the space race and the space exploration. We're going to explore a little bit about her life, her career, and how she's inspired others to be part of this world of space tech and space exploration. Thank you, Christina, for being here.
No, thank you for having me. You know, just before we started recording, we were talking about the diversity. And so I grew up in South Dakota. I am one of 10 children. I have 5 brothers, 4 sisters, 5 girls, 5 boys in my family. And I always say to people, like, you could never have predicted my life in South Dakota to working with astronauts in the space world. I was as far away from it as you could, almost as if I was in another country, because it was so not what we grew up knowing about or thinking about. And the funny thing is I'm a musician, I'm a singer. So I was in a family band growing up. I moved to Los Angeles. I tried to become a rock star. And that's really my background, is music was my whole life with me and my family, and all of my family are musicians. And as I mentioned to you, my mom is Oglala Sioux Lakota, Native American, mm-hmm. and Mexican. And then my dad is a big white guy of German, English, Irish, Polish descent. So I'm very mixed. So I kind of got this unusual look to me that if people don't know what I am when they see me, but I'm very tall. I'm 5'10", which I got from my father's side. Anyway, I fell into the space world or the space interest because I was an entertainment person for a long time. And I ended up running a record label and production company, radio show for an American celebrity named John Tesh. I don't know if you remember his name, but he used to be on Entertainment Tonight for a
while. Oh, yeah. Time. Okay, now. Yes.
Yeah. And then he left and did his music. So I worked for him, and he basically mentored me and taught me how to run a production company and all of these things. Anyway, I loved that job, but I was working every day for years, literally. And I finally decided I needed to have a quiet, boring life for a little while. And I answered an ad in the Hollywood Reporter magazine in Los Angeles. It was for Buzz Aldrin, Apollo 11 astronaut. So I was hired by Buzz's ex-wife because of my entertainment background. She wanted someone who could book his appearances and handle his media and PR and do more mainstream kind of things. So when I started working for Buzz, I knew nothing about the space program. And I didn't know that there was more than Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin who walked on the moon. And so over the course of like the next few years, I got to know pretty much all of the Apollo astronauts who were still alive. And still to this day, I know all of the astronauts, Apollo astronauts who are still alive. And at first it was just a job to me. But then I began to realize that, because I've traveled all over the world with Buzz, that what Apollo 11 and the moon landing did to people's hearts all over the world. You know, it united us as humans for like this one precious moment in the world. You know, it's to me, arguably the only time in recorded human history when the world stopped, waited in anticipation, and then celebrated a human achievement, like that the whole world stopped and celebrated. And it wasn't like coming together after a tragedy. It was coming together to celebrate humanity.
Yes.
And that was so powerful. And that seeing how people reacted all over the world when they would meet these astronauts really touched my heart, because I realized I was getting to witness the impact that Apollo 11, you know, and that first moon landing made on people. And not just their hearts, but like, you know, obviously it drove a lot of people to become scientists and engineers. And it, you know, it created what I say is the game changers of today. People like Elon Musk, people like Jeff Bezos, you know, the people who are changing the world, Richard Branson, you know, all of them were inspired by Apollo 11. And so I'm very passionate about promoting the message that not only did we go do this impossible thing, but that every single astronaut that I've ever met, they have all gone to space only to discover the Earth, you know?
Yes, isn't that ironic?
and that's a profound thing. And I'm not saying that they lost their sense of exploration or wonder, but it also made them realize how valuable this planet is. And also how small we are, but meaning that, you know, when they were at the moon or they were traveling far away and looking back at the Earth, like every human alive was on that little, you know, yes. marble. So that's the part that I really like to focus on from my experience of having seen how people were impacted by this.
It's fascinating. Thank you for sharing that background. So in Venezuela, I studied 12 years of music, you know, and my dad is a musician. He started singing for a living when he was 12 years old.
So did I, 12 years old.
There you go, wow. it's interesting that you have that sensibility from the artistic side and from the business world as well, and the ability to make those connections. And I absolutely agree with you, the fact that this technological and scientific advancements for the most part, at least in the space race, has helped us to realize us as human beings, or how fragile our world is. And that's one of the things that fascinate me about this field. You know, I'm not a scientist. I'm not an engineer. But just like you said, not only in Apollo 11 when they got to the moon, but all those Apollo missions were so historic. I remember Apollo 8 is when for the first time they were orbiting the moon, and well, it was a first, so they didn't know if, you know, once they were going around the moon, they were gonna float into space, you know, and they'd be seeing again. And also Bill
Anders,
and along with the
Jim Lovell.
They said they did my favorite reading of Genesis, in which the world stopped. It wasn't Christmas Eve, am I right?
Christmas Eve.
You know? And even after the landing on the moon, Apollo 13, to me, it's one of my favorite moments in space history, is because it shows the ingenuity to save lives. Can you tell us a little bit about, well, how it was working with Buzz and with other figures in the space race?
Yeah, so, you know, I have to say, when I started the job, Buzz was 77 years old, and I really thought it was going to be nice and quiet and boring. And I always say I did not know what I was getting myself into, because his mind goes a million miles a minute.
And oh, really?
Well, I mean, he did, you know, this was 13 years ago, but he was 77. And, you know, I thought he probably just read the paper every day, and maybe he did an appearance every few months or something. I did not realize how much energy that he had, and how much ambition he had about future missions, and especially going to Mars. And so for me, it was a job, because it was my job to make sure he did his, you know, gave his speeches and he got to where he was supposed to go, and I negotiated it. But pretty soon I began to like say, see how people reacted. And he would speak to a big corporate group of people and they would be crying, you know, afterwards, or just, you know, watching that footage of him walking on the moon. And I wasn't born, you know, yet. So even though like to my dad, it was a big deal. It was hard to understand because I wasn't alive when it happened, you know.
Same here. Uh-huh.
And so, but then I began to hear a story. I mean, almost every day for years and years, someone would come up to us at our lunch or at dinner or in the airport or wherever and say, I've got to tell you where I was when you walked on the moon.
Oh, wow.
And Buzz was always very funny because he would say, I've got a little black book. I'm trying to keep track of where everybody was.
That's awesome.
But the thing was, is I realized that I also, that was his reality. And I began to be witnesses to what this truly meant to different people all over the world. So I'll just tell you real quick, a couple stories that really stuck with me.
Please.
There were these women from Turkey who had, they were running a conference in Nashville. They're Americans now, but they grew up in Turkey. So when we were in the green room before his appearance, they said, oh, now we need to tell you where we were when you landed on the moon. And they said, we lived in a little village in Turkey. We had no running water, no electricity, but our father got the newspaper every day. And it was very, you know, so he was paying attention to the Apollo landings. And he went out and bought a Grundig radio. And he, so the night that you guys landed on the moon, our whole village came to our house to listen on the radio.
Oh, wow.
To the moon landing. 300 people, something like that. And she said, and one of the sisters said, when we heard you landed on the moon, we felt like we did it. And we were so excited and proud jumping up and down and hugging. She said, and then we got very quiet and everyone went outside and sat on the grass and then looked up at the moon. And so I said, well, what did that do for you? I mean, obviously it's an incredible, like you guys listened, you didn't even get to watch it. And she said, you know what? It made us realize that we could aim higher for our lives than we did before. And what they meant was their mother didn't know how to read or write. Their father had a fifth grade education. And so for him, for them to become teachers and become educated and get a degree was a big deal. But they, after the moon landing, they both decided even that wasn't good enough or wasn't their ambitions. So the older sister went on to get her PhD in quantum physics.
Wow.
And the next sister went and got her MBA, and they live in San Francisco now, and they have very successful business that they do together. But that story really stuck with me because I thought, wow, you know, they lived in such a different lifestyle, especially than Americans do. And yet that made a huge impact on them to want to try to pursue, you know, much more than they maybe would have before. And it's that kind of story, I think, that we need that kind of moment again. You know, we need this kind of hope or making people believe that they can do something that they couldn't do before. And so I'm super inspired by the Apollo guys because they were the first and they got this perspective. But I'm almost more inspired by the people who would come up to us and tell these stories because it made me realize the impact of every nationality too, by the way, not just a couple countries here and there. So one other story that was more recent was like in two and a half years ago, I was in Puerto Williams, Chile, the bottom of Puerto Williams, like south of Ushuaia. And
that's the end of the world.
Yes, I was at the very bottom and I was there with a different astronaut. We were filming something and I was standing outside while they were filming inside this house. And this man came over and he was crab fishing and he was trying to offer me crabs. And my Spanish is terrible, by the way. So he started trying to talk to me in Spanish and asking me about, you know, what are you doing here? And I was trying to explain, you know, astronaut, you know, and space and all of that. And he couldn't understand. And I wasn't doing a good job of explaining. And then finally I said, Sabes tu Apollo 11? And then he went, Apollo 11, La Luna, la, 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 you know, and then, yeah. And then he pointed at the sky, and then all of his friends came running, and they were all older men, and they were all yelling and, like, you know, excited. And I thought, oh my goodness, like, here wow. I am at the bottom of the world, and all I had to say was Apollo 11, and they went crazy. And there's just nothing else like that, you know, like, we don't totally. Know. We don't know. We know tragic moments, our generation since then.
Fortunately, yes.
But we don't know that moment that made people so excited, so inspired. So anyway, that's something that I think is important to remind people of, which is why I post a lot about this perspective, the astronauts. But then my other motivation is a thing that I started, which is called Space for a Better World. Because I think the other problem is a lot of people today think that space is wasteful, and they'll say, oh, we've got to solve problems on Earth. Why do we want to spend money on space? We've got to solve problems on Earth. And frankly, I believe that using space is the key to solving problems on Earth. Wow, and I yes. don't even, and I don't even mean just like inspirationally, I mean like technologically. You know, we kind of take for granted what technology's been developed and that we use every day. And when people talk about, oh, we've got to deal with climate change, I'm like, yeah, but who do you think is doing that? NASA.
It is true. So many inventions have come from there, from trying to solve everyday problems that need to be put in a different context, but can be totally applied to our lives as human beings here on Earth. Thanks for pointing that out. Yes.
Well, there's so many ways. You know, I've had so many people say, I just don't know what space has to do with me. It doesn't touch my life. I'm like, you have a cell phone? You are using satellites.
There you go.
We're put up there by rockets, you know? And then, you know, like I say, with the climate change, it's the NASA satellites, it's the observation satellites that are doing that research and working in tandem with NOAA. But what's even more interesting, and I think people just don't think about it, is water filtration, air purifiers, trying to think, even those thermometers, those infrared we're using right now for the pandemic, that came really? From the space program.
Wow.
And Nike, the foam,
yes.
that's from the space program. They the basically
memory foam also came from
memory foam, yep. All yes. this stuff that we just kind of take for granted, not realizing that it was developed for the space program. And then once they finish research and development, they gift that information to the world, and then the commercial companies take it. So, but even the commercial companies, a lot of times they struggle to see, to realize maybe, or the marketing people don't, like, where this came from. You know, they just know, oh, this is a good idea to apply this on Earth, you know. But I want people to understand how much more learning about living in space can help us solve the problems of living on Earth.
I really appreciate you showing us that actually there is not only a connection, but we can be a part of those programs and also learn and even contribute to them. And it doesn't have to be an elite. It's not only NASA. NASA is doing stuff for the entire world. How is that experience for you of you've witnessed discoveries and experiments and achievements that had affected the entire human race? Can you tell me a little bit about how that has affected you in your life?
Yeah, I mean, I've always wanted to, so I've always been very interested in traveling. You know, when I was a kid, I said I was gonna become a rock star so I could travel the world.
Awesome.
And instead I tell people I ended up managing the rock star of astronauts, Buzz.
Yes.
But the thing that I will say is that what it has really done for me is give me more of a sense of purpose to try to do things that promote inspiration. Or I think inspiration has really been lost. We're just so caught up in so much like information overload now, you know? So how do you get inspired to want to do something? So for instance, Lockheed Martin, you know, they've been working on building a lunar lander for several years now. And one of the guys who works there was telling me, you know, we struggle to fill these jobs. Like we do not have enough of a workforce. I had a meeting with Boeing a year ago and they said, we're trying to go to high schools now. Like we will train people. We need technicians. You don't have to have a college degree. And I said, yeah, but you don't, nobody knows this. Nobody knows that this opportunity is available. And somehow the people in the space choir need to do a better job of reaching out to the mainstream and getting people to want to be a part of it the way that they did in Apollo. Because the thing that I really appreciated about Apollo is how they welcomed everyone. And, you know, Buzz used to talk about in his speech, we would show a slide of an African-American seamstress sewing their spacesuits in a sewing machine.
Yes.
And he would talk about how important that job was and how today someone might think, oh, I'm not going to become a seamstress, or I've got to become an engineer. And I was talking to one of my friends at JPL for like the Mars rovers that they said, and he said, no, we still have
Jet Propulsion Lab, just to let you know, guys.
Yes, Jet Propulsion Lab. And he told me, we still have seamstresses. They sew the parachutes. So that's the kind of thing that I would love to try to help NASA explain better that these are still valuable jobs, that technicians are still valuable jobs that they still have, and they're struggling to fill. And I said, the problem is you guys need to try to inspire them and to welcome people in a way that makes them want to come and work for you, because, you know, people don't know the opportunity is there. And I just don't think you're doing, the outreach is not right. I think if people understood it more and they felt a part of something, you know, important or exciting, then they'd want to come and work for you. But I said, but most people, young people I know, they want to become YouTubers, or they want to, you know, they want to go and work for Google, or they want to go, you know, work in Silicon Valley. And I'm not saying those aren't exciting places to go, but there's a huge opportunity to be part of space, which is pretty exciting and important. But I think there's still a disconnect there of trying to make the mainstream public understand the opportunity.
And the wonderful thing is that people with your background that is more humanities or arts oriented is making a difference in the field, in this field that is making humanity go forward and going to the stars. So thank you. So for you listeners out there who think you can't have anything to do with such a great enterprise reaching the stars through different space programs, I invite you to explore, to get to know this industry better, because just like Christina is saying, they're in need of maybe us, and we just don't know. And there are opportunities there to benefit humankind, and we just don't take them because we don't believe, or we don't even know that they're there. So Christina, thank you so much for letting us know about it.
Yeah, I saw somebody do a meme last week, which is saying, don't self-reject, meaning don't talk yourself out of applying for a job because you're worried you're not qualified. Like, what do you have to lose to apply? You know, if you don't apply, you won't get it. If you apply and you don't get it, you're in the same boat. But if you apply, you might get it. You know, you
exactly.
might.
Exactly. There's nothing to lose.
There's nothing to lose. And it's interesting how people talk themselves out of trying. You know, I suppose people are worried about rejection, but the thing is, the rewards can be amazing. So like when I worked for Buzz Aldrin, when I got that job, everywhere I went all over the world, people would say, wow, I wouldn't have had the guts to apply for that job. And I think, but what have you got to lose, you know?
Exactly. So there's the part of imagination and daring to dream, am I right? Maybe people with backgrounds that are not what we think successful, whatever that means, we don't dare, and we might be missing opportunities out of fear, just because we do not believe we are born to succeed or to reach for the stars, for the best in certain fields. And this is one of the reasons why I started the podcast, is to help us change that point of view in some cultures, including mine, myself. Sometimes and we are surrounded by so much poverty, violence, drugs, you know, broken homes. And we believe that that's what defines us. And it doesn't have to be. we can do so much more, not only for our families, but for society, for the world. And thanks for opening a window to that possibility, Christina.
Yeah, I have a friend, and you might be interested in talking to him. His name is Julio Aprea. He is from Argentina, and he is one of the heads of communications for the European Space Agency now. And awesome. I said, like, how did, you know, what made you want to go into space? You know, from Argentina, you wouldn't think. And he said, watching the moon landing, and he's younger than me. And he was just like, just realizing that they went to the moon. I mean, that made me think, wow, you know, what could I do? So I think, you know, we just need more people to take the leap, you know, to try to give it a shot, because that's the biggest thing is people are worried they're not qualified enough or they're not going to get it. Maybe you won't the first time, but the thing is you've got nothing to lose by trying, you know.
I'm one of those who has tried, by the way, because there was a communications position in NASA last year, and I tried for it. I never heard back from them, but the fact that I dare, and I'm passionate about it, I've lost nothing. I've only gained even more respect and more more passion for the space programs, to be honest.
Yeah, and I mean, look, it's obviously not a guarantee, but that being said, you know, if you have the courage to try one place, then maybe you go and try this next place, or, you know, it's worth trying at the very least, because sometimes the rewards can be really amazing, you know, and I've been able to see people get to do extraordinary things. And don't get me wrong, I really respect astronauts. I know a ton of astronauts, but I also have heard people say, like, astronauts are the elite humans. And I say, no, they're not. They're just as flawed as the rest of us.
There you go.
But they're willing to take the leap. They're willing to take the risk. And you know, and so I think that's something. I have a friend in Brazil who said, I wish I could have been an astronaut. And he's a surgeon. And I said, you could be an astronaut. You could still try. You're young enough. And he said, really? And I said, yeah, most of the astronauts that go to space now are in their 40s, 50s. They're not that young, you know? And he goes, yeah, but I probably need more schooling. And I said, you're a surgeon. You're kind of overqualified to be an astronaut. Something new that I learned recently, which, that you still needed either a math degree or an engineering degree. Which, to be honest, to me is kind of silly now, because they're not flying the spacecraft. It's
a machinery. It's all software based.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they learn basic maintenance stuff, but they're not like building that. You know, they're not like.
I agree.
Piloting anything, you know. So.
Well, they're precisely the advances have made more and more possible for a regular person to learn how to pilot the spaceships, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the commercial space industry is really, it's exciting now, you know, with what SpaceX is doing and with what Blue Origin, Jeff Bezos's company is doing. Virgin Galactic had a very successful test a couple of days ago.
Yes, that's right.
But I mean, what's even more interesting, Astra, I don't know if you saw Astra, it was a little tiny rocket company, and they successfully lifted off their rocket from Alaska a few weeks ago. And
I did not know that.
Yeah, look it up. So that's the thing that's kind of exciting and interesting, is that it's starting to become something that you don't have to be a government, you know, to do, that you could, if you've got the right people and you get the right elements together, that you might be able to actually have your own commercial space company. Satellites is the main area. There are a lot of commercial satellite companies now.
Yeah, that's right. A lot of different applications, especially, well, what along with the SpaceX to bring faster and better internet to the entire world pretty much is admirable, you know. But last year, one of the most exciting times we had was not only when our astronauts you know, the Dragon capsule connected to the ISS. Yeah. But also when we saw the star train, you know, the stellar train of satellites that SpaceX had just dropped, and see how it was like 40 tiny dots in the night sky, you know, following on, as a train. And it was fascinating to us. And when our girls saw that and they were screaming and yelling, I'm like, yes, this is what this is all about, you know, motivating the human being to reach higher.
Well, and the conjunction with Jupiter and Saturn too, that was
exciting. Yes, we saw it.
That was neat to have my neighbors, who I know don't pay attention to space normally. That was like a wonderful thing to see so many people outside in my neighborhood trying to see it.
That's right. I'm a bit of an anomaly here among Latinos, but when we went to a parking lot nearby by a hospital and we see other people, including someone from Puerto Rico, who I was too chicken to talk to, but that were looking at the skies and they brought their own telescopes and they were excited to see the conjunction. And wow, that is just humanity getting together again.
Yeah, looking up. That's the thing I like about space, is it makes us, there's a famous Stephen Hawking quote, which is, don't look down at your feet, look up. You know,
yes,
but the skies, because that's where possibility lies, you know.
We could not end on a better note, Christina. Thank you so much for joining us today in our show. Needless to say, you are always welcome to come back, and you can count on us as an ally to bring more talent to this beautiful field of space exploration in general. Thank you, Christina.
You bet. Thank you for having me.
Wow, what an inspiring human being. Christina has used her talent to inspire humanity to strive, to look up, to reach for the stars. My invitation to you, my listeners, is to try to inspire others with your talents, with your skills and gifts, with your work. And one last thing, Christina, with a voice as sweet and powerful as yours, please start your own podcast. This was your host, Gonzalo Alberto Peña, and this is Inno Latino. Nos vemos. Tastes like love, that it's coming.